everybody. Welcome to the A&N After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
Hey.
And we've got a pretty interesting show for you tonight, I think. If you're looking at the video description, we're going to be deep diving into the current Fuji TV scandal, which is currently going on in Japan. We've had a couple articles up on Anime News Network and how this scandal could potentially affect the upcoming spring season shows that air on that network. It's actually pretty complicated, and I had to look into quite a lot of things. Multiple bigwig business guys are involved. We've got a U.S. investment corporation calling an 87-year-old man a dictator. We've got all kinds of crazy stuff going on. We're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about Apothecary Diaries and Orb. But before we get to that, we also have a sponsor this week. We have a sponsor, Grand Summoners, the mobile game. So I have a trailer to play for you guys and a little bit of information about one of their upcoming collaborations. And also, if you're watching us on YouTube, if you get in the video description, there's a link there to find out more about it. But first, let's just get to that trailer. So you guys should be recognizing these characters, right? This is reincarnated as a slime. So to update everybody on the collaboration that's going on with Grand Summoners, the pixel art anime RPG Grand Summoners is collaborating with That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime. So Grand Summoners is celebrating its 7th year with a bunch of giveaways, new party units, and this exciting crossover event with everyone's favorite slime. So get the chance to summon fully voiced versions of the characters from the show and their weapons by using over 120 free crossover summon tickets obtainable from daily login bonuses and limited time missions. And get Rimuru in slime form free just by playing. So check out the link in the description to learn more about Grand Summoners, download the game, and start your adventure with Rimuru and company today.
Very nice.
Yeah, so shout out to Grand Summoners for sponsoring this episode. Hopefully that gets some of you guys to check out the game.
So 7 years, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good for a mobile game.
Mm-hmm. Has to be doing something if it's been around that long.
Yeah, I've played several that didn't probably make it past a year or two.
No, Near Reincarnation didn't even make it to 3.
Really? Yeah. And that had Yoko Taro.
And it was Near.
But... And it was Near, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say the last one I played that unfortunately ended service, at least in the US, was Princess Reconnect. I was actually playing that one for a while. Wow. Yeah, because I can always watch the anime. But
my wife was just telling me that one of the gacha games she plays, I can't remember what it's called. I think it has to do with like food. They're like okay. Food, but they're characters, but they represent different foods.
Okay.
And I think that one is going offline.
Oh, is it? So. I think one of the other ones I played, I think I just phased out of it, but is still online, I think, is Cookie Kingdom.
Oh, yeah. No, that's still going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cookie Run, Cookie Kingdom. I think they even have a third one out. Or
Do they?
They have a VR. I saw on the Quest store, they have a VR experience. I don't really know what it's like. But
unless you get to eat the cookies.
No, I think you're like cookie height. I think you get to like.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't check it out, but.
I'll have to look into that. We got a VR headset for Christmas, so I need to see if it's compatible then. That sounds fun. Speaking of games, before we get into the Fuji TV stuff, James, you've been playing Yakuza Pirates. We got
Pirate Yakuza
in Hawaii. And you were just telling me off camera that, much to my surprise, this is not a period piece.
No, this is not. What was it? Ishin, the Dragon Ishin, where they were in the. Was it Tokugawa? What era were they in? Was it Meiji?
I played zero Yakuza games.
Okay.
So I don't.
Or whatever era they're
was
in.
Was it Meiji? I thought there's one.
I think it might have been. Because, they had guns, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think there was a gunfight. So I think like late Meiji, because that would have been like late 19th, early 20th century.
Yeah.
No, this is very much a like an epilogue or like a spinoff of Infinite Wealth.
Okay.
The modern day turn-based Yakuza game starring Ichiban and also Kiryu that partially takes place in Hawaii in Honolulu.
Okay.
This is it's using that same map as the RGG team likes to do. And it stars for the first time in a few games since Zero, I think, you play as Goro Majima.
Okay.
And yes, you are 100% sailing around an old-fashioned wooden sailing pirate ship. You do have jet engines, but just ignore that. it's basically a galleon with pirate sails and cannons. And you have cutlasses and flintlock pistols, but it is 100% 2024. And
the more
Hawaii.
Ever since we started talking about this a little bit ago, you just keep dropping these little things that boggle my brain. First, it was that this isn't a period piece. And then now you're saying there's jet engines on the boat. I just feel like there's a continual little bit of absurdity.
You can get laser beam cannons. Cannons that are laser
beams. Can't even get those now.
Has that ever stopped the Yakuza?
No, I guess not.
And again, there is basically ripped straight out of Final Fantasy VII, like a cyber steampunk pirate utopia casino fortress hideaway, like cave volcano thing that's just off the coast of an American state, just hanging out.
Chris Edison says I should play these games if they are for me.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, they're Pringles. Once you pop, the fun don't stop. I will say I don't actually recommend that people do what I did and play every single game in order.
Okay.
That is a lot of Yakuza.
Yeah, I remember when you were doing that and you
so much.
So you're all caught up then?
I haven't played Isshin.
Okay.
So I haven't played Isshin and I haven't played Lost Judgment. I played Judgment, but not Lost Judgment. That's like it's technically a different franchise, but it takes place in the same universe and it's basically
I thought it was a different franchise. Didn't know it took place in the same universe, but
no, it's a fun. Basically when they went turn-based, Judgment was going to be their series that stayed action oriented, that
just
did the classic gameplay. But then there was a whole bunch of drama with the main actor guy and his talent agency and all that stuff.
I remember that.
Which apparently got resolved, but there still has not been any development about.
I thought they took him out. I thought he got patched out of the game.
No, that's a guy who got arrested for doing coke.
or
weed, one of the drugs. Probably weed, if Japan is. No, this guy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He's a ridiculously famous Japanese actor. He's a beloved. He definitely, I think, is playing a character that's a lot younger than he is, but whatever.
Okay.
He's supposed to be like in his 30s and he looks like 50, but whatever.
Whatever.
His talent agency didn't want them to, there was a dispute over making PC ports of the game because they did not want files with his likeness to be like moddable or to be in any kind of, you know, a very old-fashioned approach to just digital media. And Sega basically said, we have discovered that it turns out releasing games on PC makes us more money, weirdly enough. I guess there's no more Judgment games because he's like the main character.
Yeah.
And apparently that got resolved. Like I read that they had come to some sort of agreement because they released a PC port, but
I
haven't made any more since then.
Interesting. Okay. Speaking of games, I have played all the way through the 100 Line demo now. For those who like need a refresher,
Is that the Kazutaka Kodaka?
This new Kazutaka Kodaka game but I believe he's also making it with, is he also making it with Uchiko?
He's making it with the Ever 17 999 guy.
Yeah, Uchikoshi. Mm-hmm. Yes. For those who haven't, the demo is out on Steam. You can go download it. It came out today. You're going to get about 4-ish hours of gameplay just out of the demo. It's really long because that is how long it actually takes them to drip
feed you tutorialize everything.
The mechanics, because there's story in between. They're not like dropping all of it on you at once. It is very Danganronpa coded with tactical RPG fighting in it.
Is it real time or
turn-based?
Okay. Fire Emblem-esque?
Yeah, I would say Fire Emblem, or wasn't Breath of Fire also that?
No, Breath of Fire is just a JRPG.
Okay. But yeah, you get a certain amount of AP points, you have a certain amount of fighters on the field, and AP points is an action point, and you can use those as you wish. So you could have one character do almost all of the action that round, or you can divvy it up or something, okay, you know, that's cool. Something like that. Yeah. I'm not good at tactical RPGs. I grew up on turn-based, and I like just having hold still while I do my actions at them instead of moving around the board. But there is a difficulty mode for those of us who
want
to focus on the story difficulty mode. When I played the demo, because I'm going to be doing a write-up on it, I played normal mode because I wanted to be able to talk about what that was like. But if anyone's like, oh god, tactical RPG, you can baby it. It's fine. And then the other Danganronpa aspects are, of course, the character personalities. I expect them to be fan art and meme to death almost immediately.
That's what they do.
You've got a absolutely wild looking like emo girl who's got that, what was that character from Danganronpa? And then she got her own game as well.
Genocide Jack.
There's a Genocide Jack-esque character. There's definitely a Step On Me Mommy type of character.
Oh, yeah. He loves those. Kodaka, you freak. We know what you're about. I played Raincode. I just beat Raincode
with
my wife a couple days ago.
Yeah, I love that game. I love the twist at the end. I didn't see it coming.
I liked the second, I guess maybe the last third. I liked chapters 4 and 5 the best. I was honestly having a hard time getting on board with it for a while.
Yeah.
But I liked it a lot more as the game ramped up to its conclusion.
Yeah.
Would you say, now I think one of the reasons I had a hard time getting on board with Raincode was that technically it was really rough for me.
It was.
The frame rate was really bad. And
on the Switch, yeah.
Yeah. The movement was not in any way, shape, or form pleasant.
Yeah. I reviewed it for AIN and I put all that stuff in there because I was just like clipping in the voice acting mouth.
Yeah,
it's just not happening at all. It was not there.
Would you say that this is more polished or more smooth in its presentation?
Yes, but I was playing it on a PC too. Okay. So you have that option, and I think it'll probably run better on a PC most likely.
Coming out sometime eventually.
That's true. So. Yeah, I don't know if they plan to bring it out for that, but it could possibly be better on that. But the demo that I played was English voice acting only, and I thought it was fine. Although I will definitely probably play it in Japanese just because the Japanese voice actors they've got on that are like,
super stacked. It's like a ridiculous.
It's super stacked. So I'll probably be playing it that way. And also back on the character archetypes. And you've got the biker, delinquent, tough guy with a heart of gold in there. You've also got precious baby boy that I expect to be shipped like crazy with like, the main character. He's just gotten out of the hospital. He's recovered from something. He's got long eyelashes and silver hair, and he's soft-spoken, and he's socially awkward because he hasn't gotten to talk to a lot of people because he's been sick as a child, and he just wants to make friends. And you're like, oh, okay, so either like you're actually the evil mastermind behind
all this. Is it just Nagito again? Is that what we're doing? Is this just Nagito from Danganronpa 2?
I don't think so. Yeah, definitely recommend trying that out. It's also got the free time element, like Danganronpa, where you can interact with different characters during your free time to up stats and things like that. And everyone's got their own fighting type special abilities and things.
I know my wife loved Raincode.
She
really likes it. But I think she and I both agreed that one of the downsides of it was that the structure of the mystery investigation of Leaven World, you just didn't get to know any of the characters very well.
Because you switch partners like after every case. Yeah.
And they don't interact with each other a lot outside of like, really some of the DLC fixed that, but in the main game, there's just not a lot there. Whereas something that I think made the Danganronpa game so fun was even in the trials and stuff, it's the characters are all bouncing off each other.
Yeah.
And they're working together or they're betraying each other. And they're just we kept saying that we wished in Raincode that they just cut all of the side quests because they're all awful. And
they should have replaced them, to be honest.
But if the detective friends had been involved in them, and you actually got to talk to them, you know, instead of just like the random.
I also didn't enjoy any extended time I had to spend with that yellow dude.
Desuhiko. So I was over him. My wife had a very similar reaction to him as she did with Jacopo in The House in Fata Morgana, where for like the first 30 minutes or an hour, she was like, I hate this guy. He's the worst. He's just she's the worst person that's ever lived. And then eventually she was, wait, do I actually love him? Wait, do I actually?
Did he get so pathetic to a point where you,
I think once they realized that he's not even good at being a creep, he's just, he is so pathetic. But in a way where he's still like likable in that
he just has no riz, right?
Yeah, he has no riz, right? But he's not gross, you know? Yeah. He's just sad, but he's not gross. He's not like groping people or you know, crossing any lines. He's just really bad at flirting.
Yeah, actually the character I disliked the most in that game was the female mascot sidekick. Because she's just...
I don't want to go on
the pores and just she was just like caustic almost the entire time. I don't care how Bowsetti you are in your transformed look or whatever, which she has great like design.
Oh sure. Again, Kodaka, I'm on to you. I know.
Yeah, we know. We freak. Yeah, we know. But
and again, the fact that she couldn't interact with anyone the whole game.
Yeah.
And so she's just yelling in your ear about boobs like for hours.
Yeah.
And again, it got better as once you got to more of the conclusion.
Yeah.
But again, like in chapter 5, I kept turning to Kate and I'm like, where was this 12 hours ago?
Yeah.
I would have loved more of this. My list of
grievances with that game, despite really enjoying the story, is actually pretty high. I also didn't like the fact that the mind labyrinth thing was just running down a hallway for really extended parts of time and it didn't really change up.
Oh, I made Kate play all those parts.
it was dull. And what was the other big issue I had? The DLC was just visual novel content, not actual cases.
Yeah.
Which made me mad.
I know.
Like, I paid for the full season pass and then the first one came out. I was like, yeah, more cases. And I was like 30, I don't actually 30, get to
it's
do
a 30-minute cutscene and it's like
anything. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but again, at the very least, it gives you a little more story. And the Kodaka formula is still good, right?
Yes.
He hasn't lost the sauce.
Yeah.
Akudama Drive is like one of the best anime of the past 10 years, I think.
Yeah, like, I need to watch it. Can you believe it's on my backlist?
I am speechless.
I think I've watched like three episodes. I just never finished it.
It is incredible.
Yeah,
truly, just it's one of those shows that I call it quietly perfect, and that it doesn't like have any moment that's destined to become like a YouTube 10 million views check out this fight scene. And it's not long enough for anything to become a perennial favorite, but pretty much everything it sets out to do, it does almost flawlessly. And by the end of the show, when my wife and I watched it, we were both like, I don't really know what I would have changed about that. Did everything that I wanted. It gave me everything I wanted. It did it.
Yeah.
Good show. Very good show.
One last thing that I wanted to talk about is what I did directly before this podcast, which was top tier parenting bonding moment, which is Eric, who stayed home sick today. We watched Akira.
And he'd never seen it. Yeah. Now, I bet now he appreciates all of those Akira slide references
when
that are in everything.
I only meant to sit down for the like beginning of it and ended up sitting through the whole thing.
How are you going to not watch Akira? Like, how are you going to not watch it?
Yeah. And so when the bike slide happened, I pointed, he did the thing.
I think the only two, I think I said this on the last podcast.
Yeah.
Moratorium on the Akira bike slide. I don't think we need any more of them.
No more. Nope.
But the two that I will give a pass to.
Yeah.
Shadow had to do it in Sonic 3. That's the law. He can't not do it. I'm pretty sure that's why they made him. So that they could someday have him do the slide in a movie.
Yeah.
And then the one in Nope was
I was gonna say it was done in Nope. And then
that one was earned. Was an earned Akira slide.
Yeah. But it was very funny because when I ended, he's like, I thought this movie was about motorcycles. Like, this is what happens when you don't let your buddy borrow your really cool bike. Because the inciting incident is just the continual buildup of Kaneda emasculating Tetsuo for his entire teenage life. And then he gets psychic powers. What do you think is going to happen?
It's just the boy version of the substance is what it is.
Like, one of the first things he does when he gets out of the hospital is like, where's Kaneda's bike? And it was like, he still wants the fucking bike.
Yeah. I'm serious. Yeah. Akira the Substance double feature. That's a perfect program right there.
Yeah. I need to still watch that as well.
Lindsay.
I watched The Conclave instead. And also a really good movie, by the way, everybody. Go watch Conclave.
The Substance is
It's a perfect film.
Well, yes, honestly, it is.
Yeah.
But for you especially, I just need to know. I just need to know your reaction. I just need to see your face.
I'll watch it tomorrow.
Because that is a movie where there, and anyone that's seen The Substance that is listening to or watching this will be able to tell you, there is a moment near in the final act of the film where it really, it shifts into straight up don't give a fuck mode. I'm going to use my one for that.
Okay.
And I had to physically resist from standing up and just clapping in the middle of the theater.
Yeah.
Because I was like, a studio paid money. And she got away with this.
Yeah.
And it was at that moment where, for the first time in my life, I saw a man just walk out of the theater. And I was like,
is it that gross? I'm so excited.
Not only is it that gross, it is that weird.
Okay.
Cool. I'm talking like Tetsuo the Iron Man levels of
just
it is not in any way concerned for normal people.
Yeah.
Doing its thing.
Another one for the freaks. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It is a freak movie with a capital K.
Yeah. Nice. Not to derail too much. Have you watched The Conclave, though? Because I desperately also need to talk to people about that movie.
No. In fact, I can't. I don't know if I know what The Conclave is about. I don't. How have I missed that?
About electing a new pope.
Oh, with Ralph Fiennes?
Yeah, with Ralph
Fiennes. Oh, I did want to see that. I heard it's trashy as hell, but in a good way.
It's a really good thriller, and it's got John Lithgow in it as well, and Stanley Tucci.
And by trashy, I mean, like, it did what's his name? Freaking Angels and Demons, Dan Brown, was too afraid to do in his movies.
It doesn't get into, like, Christian mythos sort of stuff. It is literally just about electing a new pope, and then the guy who's running the election procedure finding out that all the lead candidates have scandal and going through that. And then there's a twist at the very end, and it made me want to scream because it was so good. Please watch Conclave, anyone who hasn't seen it yet. I watched on Amazon Prime. I rented it. It was really good.
Is it long? Maybe it's something I can fit in tonight.
It's just 2 hours. It doesn't overstay its welcome. Mm-hmm. At first, you're like, this is going to be really slow and talky because it's all basically within the Vatican the entire time, because when they're electing a new pope, the cardinals aren't allowed to leave, and it's just a bunch of really old dudes talking to each other. But the drama and everything's really good.
Nice. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Lum Rama Yasha says, Conclave is basically like an airport novel plot. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I watched it again. We haven't gotten to the anime yet, but I finished my Coen Brothers watch through over the long weekend. Mm-hmm. And so we just watched Hail Caesar. And
I've seen that, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, it was a while for me too.
Yeah.
But that movie just reminded me that I'll watch any goddamn thing that man is in.
Yeah.
Like the menu, just put it in my veins. Put it in my veins. It is
so good. I think the first movie I actually ever saw Ralph Fiennes in was Red Dragon, which came out when
I think he's the best part of that movie.
He is. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Lum Rama Yasha says, how many of the Best Picture nominees have you guys seen? In order for me to answer that question, I need someone to tell me what all of them are, because I don't know off the top of my head. I think
I've only seen The Substance. This has been a bad year for me. I need to sit down and...
Let me
the brutalist one of them, because that movie is like 3.5 hours long. And
it is, the architecture one.
Yeah. I want to see it. Like, we have a really good list this year. The fact that The Substance got the nomination in and of itself, I'm happy.
Yes.
Like, when was the last time a horror movie got the nom?
Yeah, like arguably Silence of the Lambs.
So, 1990?
Yeah, that was in the 90s. I don't know if that was the last one. That's just the last one I remember.
I can't think of one since then.
So, here are the nominees. Emilia Perez, I haven't seen and have no intention of watching.
Is that the musical?
Yeah, it's the stealth musical made by the French guy who hates Mexican people Mexican people. And also a whole bunch of shit has come out about the lead actress as well.
Yeah, isn't that about, it's like the transgender cartel?
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way I can't imagine how the movie handles that subject matter in a way that would be fun.
Yeah, a complete unknown I haven't seen. That's something I'll watch eventually. I am so over Timothée Chalamet's face. I am. He's in two of these. He's also, there's also Dune Part 2, which I also haven't watched.
Oh, I saw that. Okay. So I've seen two.
Yeah. I've heard good things about Nickel Boys, but I know absolutely nothing about it.
Same here.
I'm Still Here. I also don't know what that's about at all, actually. Wicked. We already talked about Substance.
Okay, for three. So I've seen three. That got Wicked, that had a Best Picture nom?
Wicked, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen... I might watch it eventually. I'm going to be absolutely real with you guys. I find the lead actresses a bit triggering as far as like body stuff goes. And it's just, I'm not really like, I don't know if I want to watch it.
Wait, I love for the what? Book.
Which one's this? Wicked.
Oh, okay.
They're like so skinny, James. And I don't want to get into any kind of like things that could be misconstrued as like body shaming them or anything, but it's a lot for me. So
I have felt similar things about Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
Girl needs to eat a hamburger.
Nora, I also don't know anything about.
I want to watch that so freaking bad, but I know that it's going to be like really stressful for my wife, and so it's one of those ones that I need to like find some time where I can watch it on my own.
What's it about?
That's the one. It's about the sex worker that it's like a Cinderella type thing where she ends up like getting taken in by the Russian gangster guy to like pretend to be his wife or his partner or something. I've heard so many great things. I feel like that's the shoe-in. That's the one that has the most buzz.
Oh, really? Okay. And then there's The Brutalist. Conclave is also nominated. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. And it's doing really well in the box office. It's made over $100 million and it's mid-budget drama, mostly targeting older people. Like the demo for it was 35 and over just because of the subject matter and everything. It's also got...
It's about regular humans that are doing vaguely regular insofar as the Pope is concerned. But you know.
Yeah. And then Isabella Rossellini is also in it as well. As a nun.
Oh! Wait a minute. Am I having a brain fart, Isabel? That's...
Beautiful Italian woman. I think she was in a bunch of Lynch's movies.
From Blue Velvet, right?
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I don't know why. I was like, no, wait. Don't be stupid and misidentify the leading actress of Blue Velvet.
Rachel also points out Nosferatu got nominated for something. Yeah, not Best Picture.
Which it should have gotten because it was definitely one of those movies that I've been in so long.
Yeah, Nosferatu is getting Best Production Design, Best Makeup, Best Cinematography, which it better win.
If it didn't get the Best Cinematography nomination, the Oscars, we would need to eat them alive.
Is that something that happens in Substance?
We just need to devour their flesh and prove our dominance over them and make sure that their ancestors know that we can never be denied.
Yeah. And best costume.
The old ways were good ways, guys.
I can't believe that they snubbed Lily Rose Depp on that one, but.
They only ever nominate horror movies. And again, the fact that The Substance got the nomination, I feel like it has to be because of how potent and powerful and visceral the social commentary is.
Yeah.
And it's great filmmaking, right? But as far as like why it would appeal to the Oscar, what's the
voters.
Word? The voting board, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because it's, and also I would say it's probably because it's not scary.
It's
existentially scary and it's gross, but it's not like actually scary.
Yeah.
In the same way that Silence of the Lambs, that was a thriller, thriller.
Yeah.
Never mind that it's about a man that eats faces.
And to be fair, he got and won that Oscar, and he's only in that movie for, I think it's like accumulatively 13 minutes.
Yep.
The movie's like over 2 hours or something. So,
yeah.
Anyway, okay, let's get to the news. Just a straight up warning, I suppose. This topic is pretty heavy. And it does deal with sexual assault. I'm not describing anything graphic or anything in great detail, but that is at the center of the Fuji TV scandal. This is a somewhat long report. James got to watch me write it in real time earlier today.
The post just kept coming. And I was like, oh, there's more. There's more.
Yeah. There are three articles related to this on Anime News Network. I also read an article on Japan Times and another one in the Yomiuri Shimbun, which is a Japanese newspaper, about this. The issue itself technically started in December, but it only recently started picking up steam. But I'm going to start from the top here because all kinds of people listen to the podcast, might be watching this stream, and I don't expect you all to be like as plugged in to Japanese television networks as I may be in this situation. So let's start off with, what is Fuji TV? If you're just watching anime on Crunchyroll and stuff like this, absolutely fine. You may have never heard of Fuji TV, but Fuji TV is a major television network in Japan. It's not like a specialty cable network or anything like that. It is comparable to like NBC or CBS type situation. I'm now remembering Matt Lauer. And I'm like, yeah, this is like that. It operates out of Odaiba, which, if you haven't heard of Odaiba, it's a man-made island connected to mainland Tokyo proper. It is where Tokyo Big Sight is. So if you've ever seen Tokyo Big Sight, where they have Comiket in Anime Japan every year, that's Odaiba, and Fuji TV's main hub is located there. I don't have the picture to pull up immediately, but also their building is really weird looking, and that it is like a silver stacked rectangular shape, and then there's just like this ball that has like connectors to it as well. It's crazy. That is where they are located. Fuji TV does not just air anime. They are a news network. They have variety programs, live action shows, but they do also air anime. Also, if you've maybe ever watched fan subs, you don't have to tell me this, but often when you do, they include the sponsorship information that gets cut out of the screen. Yeah, you can probably hear the Japanese in your head.
I can hear the announcer in my head.
Dekyo desu. Yeah, yeah. And that usually would have the Fuji TV logo on it if it was one of their programs. And their logo looks like a cartoonish eyeball. It's just a circle with these sort of dramatic eyelashes coming off of it.
Again, don't pirate anime, guys. But back in the day, there weren't a lot of options.
There weren't a lot. Yeah. They've been operating since the 1950s. And they have two major anime programming blocks that you may have heard of. One is Noitamina, which is animation spelled backwards, and then Plus Ultra, which is newer. And then they also have a label called Blue Lynx that specifically is for BL. If you watched the Twittering Birds Never Fly movie by Blue Lynx, that was a Fuji TV thing. And if you did watch it, you also don't have to tell me that, because that was graphic in the freaky kind of way.
Oh, okay.
So,
before the story gets too dark, I just need to get one question off my chest before I explode.
Yes.
What's in the ball?
Are you looking at it on your computer?
I've seen the building before, but I'm just thinking for the first, like, what specifically happens there?
I don't know. It has that Sile feel where
it looks like some place where the end of the world would be orchestrated.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially since I just watched Akira and they have that part with the round table and all the politicians sniping at each other. Anything could go on in there. Maybe it's a giant bounce house. Can you imagine if it was like all windows and just a bounce house and you can just let off some steam?
So dangerous.
Jumping around in there.
The window? That would be so dangerous.
But you could see down the... Anyway, this is why I'm...
Oh, that gives me vertigo just thinking about that.
Yeah, that's why I'm not an architect. For those who... If Noitamina and Plus Ultra aren't ringing a bell, like, Noitamina is a beloved programming block, especially if you're like a otaku of a certain age, because they produce shows that are targeted towards an older audience outside of this stereotypical shonen audience. If you have watched Mononoke, including the movies that have been coming out on Netflix, that series started on Noitamina. It's technically a spinoff of another show that started on Noitamina, but Mononoke started there. Wandering Sun, which is beloved to me and has never been released on Blu-ray. What's going on, you guys? Please get that. Princess Jellyfish, Psycho Pass, Masaaki Yuasa's Ping Pong before he founded Science Saru, Scum's Wish, Banana Fish, Ikuhara's Sarazanmai, Ranking of Kings, all of those aired on that block. And then Ultra Plus is supposed to be more of targeting overseas fans. So it came about once anime became this very big global force. And not everything they put out has been great, but they did the Heike story, Beastars, his first season at least, and then Trigger's BNA, Brand New Animal, and Honey Lemon Soda is currently airing on that block. So that's your quick and dirty on the history of Fuji TV. I'm now going to tell you why it appears to be imploding, which starts in December. Technically, the incident was actually during the summer, but it became...
Of 2024.
But in December, it became knowledge, at least to one very high-ranking person within Fuji TV, that SMAP member Masahiro Nakai engaged in, quote, non-consensual sexual activity, end quote, with a woman that ended up culminating in a lawsuit and a court settlement for 90 million yen, which is about 600,000 US dollars. So he paid that out. Now, Masahiro Nakai, also, if you don't know what
SMAP is. Now, real quick, just to clarify, did they settle out of court, or was there a guilty verdict?
I believe it was, let me look it up. I'm pretty sure it was an out-of-court settlement.
Okay.
So he doesn't have, as far as I'm aware of, a criminal record.
But you also usually don't pay $600,000.
$1,000, yeah.
There's nothing wrong. So
that tends to be how public opinion would interpret that, yes. For those who don't know, SMAP was one of the biggest boy bands in Japan, I think, through the like 70s and 80s. It was a really big deal. They made a lot of money. It was a Johnny's group boy band.
Johnny's group.
Not going to jump into that. We've talked about that on here before. That's a whole nother can of worms. But that's where they originated. And so he settled with the amount there. And then it got back to Fuji TV president Koichi Minato that this incident took place. And for reasons that I could not possibly guess, Minato did not tell other people within Fuji TV about this and continued to allow Minato to appear in programs and on Fuji TV for 18 months after. So as he found Fuji TV president Minato learned in presumably December. No, that wouldn't make any sense. I'm not sure exactly when he learned it. We all started learning in December and January and February. He kept him employed on television despite this and did not share this information internally. So this has caused, now that it's become public due to a tabloid publishing information about this, it's caused a whole bunch of backlash by the public and with Fuji TV's own sponsors, and this has led to resignations of several high-ranking officials, including Minato. So the Fuji TV president, Koichi Minato, is not the president any longer. He resigned in January, which he announced during a 10-hour press conference. I don't know why you would ever need a 10-hour press conference.
I guess if I've learned anything about Japanese like corporate culture, it's that what would you call it? The shame gauntlet is a well-respected institution. And so I can only imagine that in proportion to the damage that this is doing to the entire industry, there is an expectation that the time be put in. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they were going over PowerPoints for the 10 straight hours. That seems
I can't really imagine either. And there was
bowed just for 10
There was more than one press conference too. One of them was 10 hours, but there was more than one. So this came to light. The information was published in the tabloid. And then on January 27th, they held the 10-hour press conference in which Minato resigned and they announced his replacement. And his replacement is Kenji Shimizu, which I don't really expect people to know his name off the top of their head, but Kenji Shimizu is a anime producer and he helped produce Dragon Ball and Dr. Slump.
Okay.
So he's prolific in that sense. So he's taking over as president of Fuji TV. And then the company's vice chairman, Shunsaku Endo, is staying on because now there's going to be an internal investigation that's supposed to wrap up in March, but he's also since said that once that wraps up, he will resign. As you might expect, Nakai announced his retirement on January 23rd, so about a little less than a week before the press release or the press conference. So
who was in a boy band in the 70s?
Yes, I think I'm going to retire now. Timing seems good for that. So he's not going to be on Fuji TV any longer as well. Also, Fuji Media Holdings Chairman Shuji Kano also resigned. So these are top level people who have resigned as a show, I think, to say both apologize, but also it's supposed to show the serious how serious they're taking this. And the thought was that this would maybe appeal to sponsors for the TV. The two higher ups have resigned. The people most responsible aren't here anymore. That should make smooth things over financially, corporate wise. No. it didn't work. There was a survey done within Fuji TV as well. And it found that there is a surprise culture of sexual harassment, negging, power harassment as to get female employees to date you.
In the Japanese entertainment industry? You're kidding me, Lindsay.
One of the ones that I found funny in a sad way was a lot of people mentioned basically pouting. If you reject them, the deep sighing, like saying, no, I'm not going to go out to dinner with you, boss. Okay. Like that sort of thing as an attempt to strong arm it.
These are old men. Not even old, just men.
Yeah, we don't know. They didn't say it was necessarily like at what.
One of them was old.
At least one of them was
old. He was in a boy band in the 70s.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
In the Yakuza game I was playing, there was a whole sub-story about, what was the term they used? Workplace compliance. About a workplace compliance like educator, whose whole job is to teach people to not harass and demean and humiliate and abuse power imbalances and be misogynist and all the other things you're not supposed to do in order to fulfill your obligation to the social contract and be a decent person. And I was pleasantly surprised with the way the game handled it, because the main character of the game is like a 60-year-old literal Yakuza.
Yeah.
So it's not like being a decent person is necessarily on his highest list of priorities. It's Goro Majima. He's a good guy. And the whole conclusion of that game was that maybe like the way we communicate these things or the way that we try to educate people could be improved and maybe a little more focus on actually getting people on board instead of just like punish for not following every little tiny rule. And even if your intentions are fundamentally good, right?
Yeah.
But there was still an acknowledgement. Oh, yeah. Our workplace culture sucks.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people in this younger generation that are finally putting their foot down and saying, we're really not okay with how you treat us, especially when we are either women and or too poor to have any ability to stand up for ourselves.
Yeah.
And that gives me some hope that things are turning around. But unfortunately, like you were saying, this is it. I think the thing that depresses me is that on the one hand, it's good that the sponsors and that the people in the company are actually not letting this just get swept under the rug with a bunch of resignations. But it's also, I think it's one of those things that's funny is not the right word because it's not funny, but it's sadly bemusing.
Yeah.
But also not surprising at all, because I guarantee you the problem with the sponsors isn't that this stuff was happening. Mm. The problem is that people found out about it and it makes them look bad, right?
Yeah. I want to do a quick addendum. SMAP was active from starting in 1986 and Nakai is 52 years old.
Okay. So old enough to know better.
Yes. Oh, by far. I just didn't want anyone getting in the comments and being like, actually, SMAP wasn't active in the 70s. Like,
yeah, that's fair. Okay. But you know, as long as he wasn't like a literal child that hadn't learned personal boundaries yet.
No.
Should have known better than to touch someone without getting permission to do that.
Ron Brunty has asked about how this has affected Fuji TV stock. Now, I don't have the exact stock numbers, but I do have some actual financial loss numbers that I can share. After the press conference, it did not in fact smooth things over with sponsors, and they have lost approximately 80 corporate sponsors since this broke as of February 10th. And the network was actually allowing people to cancel up through March. As a result, they will have lost approximately $150 million in that 3 month period. In 3 months.
That's a lot of dollars.
It is. So anime and other programs on Fuji TV has been airing without any sponsors up to this point. That little screen that we were just imitating earlier, there's nothing on it for a lot of these shows. They've been having instead public service announcement.
Do they put the nice boat on there just to
something to fill in. There have been a couple shows in the last week that have gotten a sponsor. This includes Chibi Maruko-chan gained a sponsor, and Honey Lemon Soda has gained a sponsor, and Bandai Namco has sponsored Dragon Ball Daima and a few other shows, and there's been some ads for the Rose of Versailles anime film, but otherwise nothing. As an interesting caveat, this is almost aside, Fuji TV's quote-unquote emperor is this 87-year-old man. He was formerly the president, and now he is an advisor as to Fuji TV and a chairman to their larger Fuji Sankei Communications Group. This guy's name is Hisashi Hieda, and there is currently pressure on him from investors to also resign, primarily from Dalton Investments, which is actually a U.S. investment company. They don't like him. They haven't liked him for years, actually, is what I end up finding out.
So is this more of just like a power move? Hey, let's get him out of here.
Well, they blame him for the network's old-fashioned nature. Old-fashioned is a quote. And they've sent 3 letters since the Nakai scandal, including one where they referred to him as a dictator who has controlled the network for 40 years. They're the second largest investment or shareholder for Fuji TV. They have about between 7 to 8% shares in it. So they're really pushing for him to resign as well. So we'll see. He could very easily retire. He's 87 years old.
If he's 87, he could fall down the stairs tomorrow if he steps wrong.
There's a lot of things that could happen. But he is highly respected. He's been with the company for a really long time and has steered it. When there was an attempt at a corporate takeover, he managed to fend it off. And so he's just very well-respected media executive in general in Japan. So
I have to imagine what it must be like being in Japan, watching TV, because they still have a TV culture in a way that we really don't in America anymore.
Yeah.
And after decades and decades of sitting down to watch a show and that sponsor spot being like empty, that feels like apocalyptic almost.
It would probably seem really weird. It would be like tuning in to, well, not the Super Bowl, but imagine if you watched Super Bowl and there were no commercials.
Yeah. And there was like a very conspicuously blank moment. Yeah,
because the NFL, like...
Because Drake sued for getting bodied too hard by Kendrick.
I was thinking more of what if one of the ESPN announcers was involved in such a large...
Oh, you just get elected president, Lindsay. It's fine.
I was about to say...
You just become the Secretary of Defense, or you'd become the ambassador to China. Name any politician, whatever. James.
Named any politician. No, it just... I'm sure there have been scandals with football players and it didn't result in anything like this. So it's just, but
no, they you like, you beat 3 people within an inch of their life. Oh, you don't get to play next week. Like,
yeah. As far as anime fans are concerned though, bringing this all back around to why our listeners are mostly here, there are several shows that are supposed to be airing on Fuji TV as part of the spring anime season. This includes To Be a Hero X, The Dinner Table Detective, The Beginning After the End, and the Chinese Donghua series, Don't Give Up. All of those are supposed to air on Fuji TV in April. Don't know how the net loss of network funds could affect that. Yeah. I can't give you a firm answer on whether they'll get pushed back or what, but...
I'm assuming the contracts that a lot of these shows make, right? It can't be as simple as, oh, we'll still air streaming internationally and we just won't be able to air local. I'm sure there's some kind of deal where they have to air first broadcast.
It is. Yeah. I would be interested to see that because I'm pretty sure like at one point Amazon had specifically Anime Strike had a deal
Someday you'll be able to say the name of Anime Strike without me bursting out into laughter, but not yet.
But there was a point when they specifically had a deal with Noitamina, and they got all of those shows. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that was signed with the network. So I would think that Fuji TV would still have to honor those contracts unless they just don't get the shows for a particular reason. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I guess is what I'll say.
Well, and it's like, because it's like how when there's a delay in Japan for the holiday or a sports event or something, they still delay the broadcast stateside or internationally.
Yes, that's true.
But what would happen if you have like a whole season in the can, but then you don't have any network slot to show it on?
Yeah.
What do you do? Do you just have to wait until the next season?
Yeah, I don't know. This is unprecedented.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we've had this issue with like TV Tokyo in the past or MBS or anything like that, right?
Yeah, so. Again, imagine if like NBC just suddenly imploded and Grey's Anatomy was like, we have a whole 20-second season of Grey's Anatomy. It's done. What do we do with it?
Where do we put it?
Can you shop it around?
I don't even know. Presumably, if things are made specifically for the Ultra Plus and Noitamina block, that means Fuji TV invested money.
I was gonna say they're on that committee.
So
they're not gonna. Are they gonna give it to the competition to try to recoup some of these horrific losses?
Steve says, "What does Fuji TV just sell them to NHK instead, so they can air them? NHK slots might already be full. They might not have room."
That's the thing with it being broadcast, though, right? Like the slots are full. The slots are full. Can't air two shows at the same time.
Yeah.
And we've talked in the past how those slots are decided sometimes years out, if not at least months, right? So you can't just say, hey, can I get this in the spring? It's like, sorry, we've got contracts with other studios.
There are streaming services that they could possibly sublicense out to try and recoup costs. Something like Netflix. I don't know who owns Abema TV. That's one of the big ones in Japan. They have a lot of stuff. And there's Disney Plus as well. They get stuff.
Someday I'll also stop laughing when we talk about Disney Plus distributing anime. But
whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
But again, that's what I'm wondering. Like, are there contracts in place? Are they allowed to license a show that was originally scheduled to air with sponsorships in the spring of 2025?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. So that's the lowdown on the current state as of February 18th, 2025 on the Fuji TV scandal. I'll keep an eye on it if there's any like really big developments, like if Hisashi resigns or if we get new word about any of those shows that are supposed to be on Fuji TV. But until then.
Maybe Musk just like flies across the country and buys it.
James.
Just turns into.
Quit conjuring nightmares. You remember the brief period where his profile picture was Ed Elric?
I know. Don't worry. Again, he's too busy dismantling our government. Okay. Don't worry, rest of the world. We've got him distracted for a while.
It's fine. If you guys want to helicopter me out of here into another country at any point, just give me a call though, because I'm willing to
burn my fingerprints off. So we can
do that together. I work remotely. I can do this anywhere.
We could become VTubers. I mean, they don't even have to know who we are.
I don't want to be a VTuber.
I'll be a little cartoon bucket.
That'd be great. That'd be great. James, we ate up all of our time talking about the Oscars and then this. Why don't we try?
I mean, the substance is functionally anime, so I'm gonna defend that decision. Again, it is basically Akira, but for the female existential crisis.
Okay. Okay.
Which we need that balance.
I think we should speed run Orb first before breaking into a whole new series.
Polenta blew up.
Yes.
And everyone's dying again.
Yes.
And Draka's on the run.
Yes.
Because that one guy who's Frey. Frey, is that his name? He sold everyone out.
He did. I was suspicious of him because I knew he was that kid from the beginning. And I was
I figured that it's funny. I was watching the episode and I was thinking, are they ever going to like, what was the point of that scene? Like, why are we setting all that up? What are they going to do with him? And then he betrayed everyone and sold them all out.
The horses, necessary to the plan, but still very sad.
Very rude. Yeah. Very rude. Yeah, very, very, very rude.
Yeah.
You should go full mushroom for your VTuber persona.
James, the issue is once I get into this, I'll never get out. As soon as I can actually become a full
mushroom queen
VTuber, yeah, you'll never see my actual face again.
Well, that's the beauty of the persona, right? It can become, you can become it.
Yeah, I'm not doing a voice though. I've listened to them. I'm not doing a voice. It's just this. I'm not like, Nisley to be a mushroom witch or something. That's like not what that.
No, a mushroom witch needs to sound like a real adult human.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. The poor horses, Rachel. So that was very sad. I thought the printing press was cool though.
Yep. Printing presses are cool.
And do you trust Draka to pull this all off? Is Schmidt gonna die?
Yes. No, they're all gonna die. Aww. They're all gonna die. I also am pretty sure Draka's gonna die. But she'll she'll probably send the letter and then it'll pass on to a new person. And she
enough episodes left for a whole new protagonist, do we?
No, but it's gonna end with, as long as we keep passing our information along, we'll never really die. And that's knowledge, and that's the joy of discovery, and that's how we defeat oppression.
I do want to say that despite James's current tone, I did find it somewhat inspirational given our current times.
I'm being a little snarky. I like these episodes too. The message, like you said, for sure.
Yeah.
It's just kind of fast.
Yeah.
So it's a little hard when Polenta blew up.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, there she goes.
Polenta, is it?
Is it? No, Yolenta. Polenta.
Polenta's a fruit, right? like oatmeal sort of rice. Yes. Gruel kind of deal.
Right? Yes, it's a grits.
Grits, yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry, Yolenta. you deserve better than Polenta. I must just be hungry. No, but that was my, like, out loud when she blew up. My reaction was, oh, okay, there she goes.
I was upset that this upcoming episode, we haven't actually seen her dad. I don't think he necessarily knows for a fact that was her. I need that realization to happen.
I actually laughed at how cheeky the show is being and him picking up her severed arm. I was like, is he going to put the glove on? Is that going
to
be?
She wasn't wearing the gloves because she gave them to Draka. Draka's got her gloves.
No, Draka has the hood. He has the gloves.
Oh, he has the gloves.
He has them in his hand.
Oh, so that's right.
I genuinely thought he was going to pick up her severed arm and be like, wait a minute. Because it was obviously, I think a part of the reason they zoomed in on it was that she has, it was like a woman's hands.
Yeah.
And so I thought the idea was that he was going to put two and two together and he had the gloves. And I'm like, are you doing an OJ here? Is that what's happening? Or, but no, he's just standing there looking tired.
Yeah. Yeah. So I need that emotional payoff, I guess. After that happened, and then we watched the most current episode. I never skip the OP because it's a banger. And
it's a good OP.
It's a good OP. But I realized that they allude to it because there is a zooming close-up shot of her as a child with her holding hands with him as they walk. And I was like, oh, that's the arm that got blown off.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be super down on Orb. I think it's just one of those shows where I get a little distracted by the things that I'm not vibing with and they stand out more to me than the things that I did. I liked Yolenta's, not Polenta. I almost said Polenta. I liked Yolenta's, her last moment, that kind of collage of her memories.
Yeah, yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah. But
something that really stood out to me this episode more than the others was like, we're getting into like Danganronpa hair territory with these characters. We had like the dude the square. And then Draka had her like sticky. She straight up looked like Aoi from Danganronpa
1. Yeah, yeah.
And then you have Schmidt with his pointy mustache.
And then there's the other guy where it's like white and black bangs that go like straight up.
He's and part of me was like, gel in them. We're getting a real anime for 18th century Poland.
Yeah. Like, all the designs have been very grounded up until that point. And then they're like, we've got a lot of dudes in matching uniforms standing in a room. They all have mustaches.
You were fine with the tonsure for a 2-season show. I don't know why suddenly you're too good for the shaved bowl cut.
Yeah. I do appreciate the not look, because they were having a hard time with that. We were pointing really it out.
This is better. Than
this is better. This is definitely
the Bedeni. The Bedeni to disrespect.
Yeah. But it wasn't
the crisis egghead in the Batman show.
Stop.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
Oh, anyone under the age of 30, Google Vincent Price Batman 1966, and you'll know exactly what I mean. That's what Bedeni looked like.
But otherwise, this is mostly a setup for Draka to continue onward with, because they have one copy of the book, right? Like, mm-hmm. managed to get one out of the printing press before this. Maybe someone's got an ancient Xerox somewhere, who knows, but it'll be easier. There'll be
some more unhoused people she could just tattoo the book onto the scalps of again.
No.
If you think about it, like, those tattoos never went away.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get dark here, but I'm just wondering if they did the smart thing. Yeah. And when those men eventually passed on, and I'm assuming they have, it's been like 30 years.
Are you going to say they scalped them?
What are you going to do with it? They're not taking it with them.
No. We're going to talk about Apothecary Diaries now. James, how many days did it take you to catch up on Apothecary Diaries? You said you watched a lot, so I thought maybe...
Although I did, we basically watched all of season 2 last night and today. Okay. Very bingeable.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will admit, I got the summary for a couple of the tail end of season 1 because I was running out of time. Mm-hmm. But it turns out, I know you mentioned that season 2 is really building on stuff from season 1, which it is.
Yeah.
I recognize now, having gone back and refreshed my memory on so much of it. But I think this new season is really watchable, even for someone that hasn't gotten every single... The show does a good job of reminding you or like calling back to who's who. And I still definitely lose track of all the women. There are a lot.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
I definitely...
The opposite of Conclave, actually.
Yes. Yeah. Again, nice double feature.
Yeah.
And I definitely, especially like in this most recent episode, I confused, was it Jin or Shin with her cousin? Who is the actual emperor's favorite?
Shin. And then the cousin who's the actual concubine is, Ling Hua.
Yeah. I definitely...
Don't come for me on my pronunciations of some of these. Okay.
For a hot second in episode, the most recent one, I definitely thought she was like about to uncover something sketchy about Li Hua.
Yeah.
Because they look so similar. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, that's not quite right. She has longer hair.
Yeah.
And they even make the point that they look similar. And so
They're cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of ladies in this show.
There is. Yeah. And it also
And they don't even turn into birds. And so it's really hard for me to keep track of.
Yeah, they don't turn into birds. There's a lot of ladies. And you have the four primary concubines who all look distinctive enough that they're pretty easy to
one's,
tell.
One's
apart.
Blue, one's red.
They're color coded, it really helps. One's the new there's the little one, and she is pink. And then there's blue. And then there's the one.
I always forget she's technically one of the concubines because.
I like that they reaffirm very often that the emperor's not a creep and he doesn't do anything with her.
Yeah, the other guy was.
Yeah. So you have Lei Hua, who's the blue one with the ample chest that Mao likes to talk about quite often. And then you have Orange, who's the one that Mao hangs out with the most. Her name is Gao.
Isn't that? Yes. That is, yes, that's the one that's not a child, yes.
No, she's not a child. She's currently pregnant and already has a child. Yeah. And we know that, we learn in this episode that Ling Hua is also currently pregnant. And then you have the child one, I don't know her name. And then...
Is the little one, yeah.
And then there's the newest one who I think has maybe spoken like 5 words or something this season. She seems very kind of hoity-toity, closed off. Her dad is supposed to be like a scheming politician, and there's definitely something simmering there that we don't know about.
Is she green? Is that her color?
I'm going to describe her as purple. Purple. You know what? Okay. I can just not, but like maybe more maroon concubines in Apothecary.
No, because Mao Mao is green. Yeah,
Mao Mao's green.
She's a green one.
Yeah. She's more of a purple maroon. Like her color is a red eyeshadow. She has purple hair. And then, So there's that going on. And most of the plot in this show, overarching from first season to second season, is people keep trying to kill other people's babies.
Yeah. This is some real Housewives of whatever dynasty we're in. I keep forgetting the show doesn't technically take place in China.
It doesn't technically take place in China. And they make sure to put a disclaimer at the beginning of every episode, which I'm sure has nothing to do with potentially causing issues in China. An international
incident, yeah. Yes. Well, but also too, because when I was first watching the show, I kept getting a little confused. And some of it I just gave artistic liberty with all of the medicinal knowledge that like Mau Mau has.
Yeah.
But like when she's talking about like, doctors are doing this stuff in the West, I'm like, are we in, what century are we in? Because doctors definitely aren't washing their hands or anything else if we're supposed to be in like the 900s or 800s or if we're in like.
They have glass and 10th stuff. 10th
century.
Time period.
But then when we got to the envoys from the season, I did a little more research and I remembered, oh, wait, this is like purely, this is not China, because I think those envoys are, I think this is, it's supposed to be like Turkey.
They're Turkish. Like, they're Turkish. They're supposed to be Turkish. And I just looked it up real quick and it's supposed to be relatively 15th century.
Okay.
So this is going on about the same time period, a couple hundred years before, Orb is in Poland.
Man, they're having I don't know why the sun is favoring China so much and just ignoring the entire Western Hemisphere, but we need to steal a little bit of that sunlight.
It's a little bit of that sunlight, yeah. Yeah. What's an overall character ranking for you so far with Apothecary Diaries?
Ooh, okay. Well, I was number one. She's great. Yeah. She's queen.
Yeah.
I like her. And again, I keep mixing up because now there's the bug girl.
Uh-huh.
She's not a concubine. She's just...
washes clothes and stuff.
Okay, she's just like a gal hanging out
like
around
a handmaiden. I don't even know if she's even considered a servant. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if she's top five, but I like her a lot. But I always confuse her for the child. Who's learning how to write.
Okay. That's Mau's friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. They both wear the kind of like same uniform because they're of the same level. Like this,
yeah.
I don't actually trust Bug Girl. I'm very skeptical of her. There's something there.
I mean, she does keep popping up like out of the blue in a way that our senses have trained us to be suspicious of in these kinds of courtly shows.
Yes.
But she's fun.
Yeah.
I've really warmed up to Jinshi. My wife will be very happy to hear. At first I did not like him.
Yeah.
And I didn't really find that they had a lot of chemistry because she actively was annoyed by him. But now that the show has continued, and especially with this most recent set of episodes with the Moonlight Maiden, that was great. Yeah. I think he's my number two. I appreciate him. I appreciate the suffering he goes through. I really love the scene where they find the cat at the beginning of the season. And Mama was like going through all of the annoying things that cats do that like make people like them. And he's just sitting there thinking, wait a minute, it's everything I like about you.
Okay. You're actually just a cat. Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoy almost like all the characters. I like the concubines. I like Mau's interactions with her sisters back at the brothel. They're fun. The old lady that runs the brothel, super fun.
I like her eunuch buddy. The one who's like constantly
the one who hangs out with Jinshi?
Yes. The one who's the smaller guy, the stout guy.
Oh, the actual doctor.
Yes, who's like incompetent.
He's incompetent and very gay coded, in my opinion.
But he is a eunuch, so I guess he's gonna.
He is, but I think also it's just he's very much got like a would you like any snacks?
Yes. And he's like gay uncle coded.
Yeah, gay uncle coded. Yeah.
He's like Nathan Lane gay.
That's perfect.
Which we need more of. We need more nice older holding court gay gentleman uncle. That's an underused archetype, I think.
Yeah, he's also just like scared of everything though too.
I loved when I laughed really hard when Mama was investigating the sick servant who was being hidden away to keep people from investigating the oils that she was hiding.
Yeah.
And the doctor guy just like runs over to grab the thing and he's, oh, my lady. He's being helpful, but he's also really, really
uncomfortable with Annie because she's basically having him engage in espionage, right? Like, Mau puts on a full face of makeup so that they don't immediately recognize who she is and are pretending. They probably forged a document to get in there.
Was she wearing like 6-inch heels or something?
She was wearing taller shoes to seem taller and all these other stuff. And he's just wildly uncomfortable with the entire
thing. No, he should be at home with the cat.
That's where he really should. At home with the cat for sure. Yeah. I'm still expecting like there to be a larger overarching conspiracy thing that's going to be meted out. And one thing I did want to point out, because when my husband and I were watching this, is the episode before last ended with what seemed like Mau Mau was going to get in trouble because she's been caught practicing medicine and she's not allowed to. And we're in season two and we're like mid season two. And I'm like, they're not really going to make this like a thing where she's like jeopardy. She's been doing medicine shit this entire time.
It's literally her whole thing.
Yeah, it's literally her whole thing that everyone's been turning a blind eye to. We're not really going to make this like the new conflict. And then this episode started and the older lady was like, okay, actually, I just want to ask you to make some medicine because I think a servant girl is sick. And I was like, oh, thank God. That's not where it went.
I like that. It's one of the, you have to engage with it if you're going to be dealing with this time period, right? Where it's about the way that people are expected to act and behave, mm-hmm. even when everyone involved knows that it's like stupid and silly and no one actually wants to follow those rules, but they have to.
Yeah.
And like that conflict, when you do it, that conflict, I think, is one of the most interesting things about these like courtly drama historical
shows. Yeah.
Because there's so much tension between, like, everyone knows that Mau should be making medicine.
Yeah.
It's obvious. The emperor has children because of it.
Yeah.
But the rules are the rules.
Yeah.
And you can't go making no medicines if you don't have the right equipment between your legs for whatever reason.
It's so silly.
And the fact that they were like, I think it makes sense that the show would basically have her spend entire seasons making medicine and everyone is not only cool with it, but actively not getting murdered because of it.
But
then they might still have to be the ones to say, sorry, Mama, we have to put you in jail because too many people found out about the secret we were helping you keep.
Yeah. And it seems like I'm suspicious about the stuff with the Turkish sisters as well.
Yeah, they didn't really follow up. That was one, I didn't know if I missed it. Was the idea supposed to be, because they hinted at it.
Yeah. But
at the very end, when they had that moment after the Moonlight Maiden bit.
Yeah.
And like one of the sisters is, she basically pulls a Thanos and she's like, fine, I'll do it myself or whatever she says. She's like, yeah, now to plan B. And there's like a box. Is the idea that those are the oils that
I'm really Shin not had? Sure. Cause I got the impression like they wanted to shack up with the Emperor.
They did.
Yeah. And specifically because they were like haughty enough to think that none of the women he currently has access to are anywhere near as good looking as they are until they see Jinshi and drag. I don't know what
Jinshi's, you know.
Also, I'm gonna, since we do need to get going, but I do want to leave this part open for the audience to inform me. I thought Jinshi is actually the Emperor's oldest son, as opposed to his brother. Am I right?
That's the implication, because
there was a baby swap.
There's a baby swap, and he's supposed. I was under the assumption that he was the swap baby.
Yes, he was that older concubine who retired's baby that she had with the current emperor, because the current emperor and her were like childhood friends, I think. So even though he wasn't currently emperor, I think at the time that Jinshi was conceived, he is his oldest son.
Is it like a thing where when you become emperor and you're technically a god, you're like a different person than the guy you were before you became emperor? So then it doesn't count if you had a bunch of side pieces before then that had kids?
I would think not. At least that's not how it works with the British monarchy, as far as the line of succession goes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was what I took from that.
Yeah.
With like the visuals and the fact that he was there and she was there. And it was like, hey, there is a baby mix-up. Wonder who it could be.
Yeah.
And that would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, although it's just that Jinshi and the current emperor's age difference doesn't look particularly like much. Like the current emperor doesn't look very old.
Okay.
Jinshi is supposed to be like 19, I think.
Okay. So, but keep in mind, like, they definitely could have conceived him fairly young.
Yeah.
He could have been like 15 when he
That's got true.
The other lady pregnant.
It's 15th, 16th century China. So, yeah.
So he could, the emperor could be in his 30s and he could have a son that's almost 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Nanigashi points out Jinshi's 19 and Mao is 16. So, yeah, because I knew there wasn't a very big age gap between him and Mao. But yeah. Anyway, that's just something that I'm still trying to figure out. So if anyone knows, leave a comment, spoiler it if necessary. It's so confusing to me.
I'm assuming that they have to be building up towards some. This feels like
doesn't know about it, so they definitely could do a reveal.
Yeah. And this definitely doesn't feel like the kind of show that's going to have an overarching plot in the same way that Yatagarasu does.
Yeah.
Where I feel like it's going to be more about how the little individual mysteries eventually build into a larger tapestry.
Yeah.
But I would be interested for there to maybe be a little more, if not like plot direction. It feels like we're in, sitcom's not the right word, but where it's like, it's very episodic and it's just kind of day by day.
Yeah.
And if there was like a long-term like goal, or if like, there was some threat that Mao had to deal with that was a bit more big picture than just, you know, the illness of the week.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see how that takes shape.
Yeah. I do expect it to get there, because that is what happened with the first season, is that there was all these little things that then it's like, oh, because for instance, the lady who was poisoning people last season,
yeah,
the concubines last season, specifically she was targeting, I think chat said her name is Lin Sha, the little concubine,
yeah,
escaped. She's not dead, we don't know that she's dead, and we don't know why she was doing that. So that's like a thread that's just been dangling since first season. And I'm expecting us to figure that out this season at some point. But yeah.
And they keep talking about, and this is where I was a little confused with the envoys, because they seem to disappear.
Yeah, I don't know if they've actually left or not.
Like, I don't know either. Yeah. But there's that whole bit, like they keep emphasizing someone around here must be telling people how to make abortion drugs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We don't know that either.
And they hinted that maybe it was the envoys, like you know, the timing.
Yeah. But why would they care?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Don't know. Mysteries. So
mysteries.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in this week. We hope we got you up to date on all the movies you need to watch, the current scandal, and then the anime that is very good. We will be back next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Also, it's James's birthday, so please tell him happy birthday.
Thank you.
You don't have to tell us how old you are if you don't want to.
It's the big 3-3 for me.
Oh, boy. That's fun. Okay. Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The ANN After Show is an official podcast of Anime News Network. You can hang out with us live on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitter. Listen to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The ANN After Show is hosted by Lindsay Loveridge and James Beckett and is produced by Lindsay Loveridge.